Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter Number 1, Texts 28 and 29. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Sa Pashahastam Trin Drishtva Purusham Adidharunam Vakra Tundam Urdhva Ramna Atmanam Netum Agatam Dure Kridanaka Asaktam Putram Narayana Abhayam Plavitena Svarena Uchai Adjuhava Akula Indriya Sapashahastam Strindrishtva
Sapashahastam Strindrishtva
Purushanatidharunam Vakratam dhan urdhva vramna
Vakratam dhan urdhva vramna
Atmanam netum agatam
Atmanam netum agatam
Dure kridandakakshaktam
Dure kridandakakshaktam
Putram naranayakvayam
Putram naranayakvayam
Plavitena svareno chair Anjuha Bakulendriya Sapasha Hastung Strindrishva
Sapasha Hastung Strindrishva
Purushan Atidharunan
Purushan Atidharunan
Vakratundan Urdvaramna
Vakratundan Urdvaramna
Atmanam Netum Agatan Dure kridanakashaktam
Dure kridanakashaktam
Putra narayanahyavyam
Putra narayanahyavyam
Plavitena svareno chair
Plavitena svareno chair
Anjuha vakulendriya Saha That person Ajamil Pashahastam having ropes in their hands Trin three Drishtva seeing Purushan persons Atidharunan very fearful in their features Vakratundan
with twisted faces
Urdhvaramna with hair standing on the body Admanam the self Netum
to take away
Agatam arrived Dure, a short distance away. Kridanaka asaktam, engaged in his play. Putram, his child. Narayana, Abhayam, named Narayan.
Plavitena
with tearful eyes. Svarena, with his voice. Uchai,
very loudly.
Anjuhava, called. Akula, Indriyaha, being full of anxiety. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Ajamil then saw three awkward persons with deformed bodily features, fierce twisted faces, and hair standing erect on their bodies. With ropes in their hands, they had come to take away Ajamil to the abode of Yamaraj. When he saw them, he was extremely bewildered, and because of attachment to his child who was playing a short distance away, Ajamil began to call him loudly by his name. Thus, with tears in his eyes, he somehow or other chanted the holy name of Narayan. Purport. A person who performs sinful activities performs them with his body, mind, and words. Therefore, three order carriers from Yamaraj came to take Ajamil to Yamaraj's abode. In other words, there's one for each, one Yamaduta for the mind, one for the words, and one for the body. That's what it's saying. Three things engaged in sin, and three Yamadutas. A comparison, three and three. Therefore, three order carriers from Yamaraj came to take Ajamil to Yamaraj's abode. Fortunately, even though he is referring to his son, Ajamil chanted the four syllables of the Harinam, Narayana. Therefore, the order carriers of Narayana, the Vishnudutas, also immediately appeared there. Because Ajamil was extremely afraid of the ropes of Yamaraj, he chanted the Lord's name with tearful eyes. Actually, however, he never meant to chant the holy name of Narayan. He meant to call his son. Om Agyana Timanandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my beloved spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who is forcing my eyes open while I am standing here in the darkness of ignorance, forcing my eyes open with its torchlight of transcendental knowledge, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this historical narration, it is not mythological. That's the first point. This is not some make-believe story meant to convince us to chant Hare Krishna. This is a factual history. That is the title of the chapter, the history of the life of Ajamil, not the story of the life of Ajamil. See, story and history, two different meanings. History means it is fact. Story means it may be made up. But history means it is factual. Puranas means histories. So, this is Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just as Ajamil was saved by the power of the name, as an historical fact, similarly, it can be an historical reality that we also can be saved by the holy name. This is Krishna's great kindness and love that he manifests himself in the form of his name. Therefore, it is called Dhamma Avatar. See, Krishna appearing in the form of the name. It's not that the name is some impersonal sound vibration, but it is person Krishna, actually. In fact, Prabhupada points out in the purport, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita you may have read, he refers to the holy name as Nama Prabhu. Just like we refer to a devotee as so-and-so Prabhu. So, because the devotee is a person. You see, so-and-so Prabhu, Keshava Prabhu. You know. So, here we have another Prabhu. One of the Prabhus. This is Nama Prabhu. You see. When we have a kirtan going on, we have, you know, Keshava Prabhu is playing the drum. Someone else Prabhu is playing this, someone else Prabhu is playing that. And Nama Prabhu is also present at the kirtan. He is the name that everybody's vibrating. That's one of the persons who's participating in the kirtan. Nama Prabhu. And he's the center of it. You see? Nama Prabhu is the center. So he's one of the Prabhus. Of course, he's not an ordinary Prabhu. He is actually Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the holy name are one and the same. No difference. So, this wonderful Nama Sankirtan movement gives us the ability to qualify ourselves to not face these fierce looking fellows at the time of death. You really have your choice. Would you like to meet the Yamadutas, or would you like to meet the Vishnudutas? You choose. What do you want? You see? Do you want to see the Yamadutas or the Vishnudutas? You see? How we are living our lives moment by moment, we are setting ourselves up for one of two kinds of appointments. An appointment with the Yamadutas and an appointment with the Vishnudutas. So an intelligent person thinks, I would rather meet with the Vishnudutas because they are a friendlier group. The Yamadutas are rather mean and nasty. They throw a rope over you and they yank you out of your bodies. I don't want to go. You're coming now. You see, you're forced. But the Vishnudutas is described when they came for Dhruva Maharaj. They came in a beautiful, beautiful Vaikuntha airplane. And actually Death Personified, who is a rather fearsome character, he came running to the scene. For what purpose? To try to steal Dhruva away? No. He came and he put his head down so he could be a doorstep for Dhruva to step into the Vaikuntha airplane. He wanted to be a humble servant of Dhruva's returning back to home, back to Godhead. So death for a devotee and death for a non-devotee, they're two entirely different things. You cannot compare them. They are completely different. It may appear to be the same thing. The devotees die. So many devotees die. Karmis die. What's the difference? Everyone's dying. Someone could argue like that. There's a very nice example given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, in this connection. You know that example? The mouth of the cat? Yes. It's a very nice example. So, the cat has a mouth. And there's two ways to experience the mouth of the cat. You see. The kitten, the little kitty cat, the kitten, the mother will pick her by the skin on the back of the neck, you see. And she will take the little kitten on a ride, walking here, walking there. The little kitten feels so happy. You see, in the mouth of her mother. Meow, meow. You see? But when the same mouth is applied to a rat, the rat is going, coo, coo, coo. Prabhupada said like that. Then he said, coo, 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 coo means dying. He's crying, he's shrieking in terror because he knows that cat is going to chomp down and bite his head off. You see? It's just he's just a few seconds away from death. The cat is looking for a good place, you know, to chew in and, you know, kill him and eat him, you know. So it's the same mouth, the same cat. But the experience is completely different. So for that devotee, you see, who is facing the Vishnu Dutas, death is very nice. Prabhupada says, you simply go to sleep and you wake up with Krishna. It's like we came back late last night, we went to bed after midnight after our preaching engagement. So we were very tired, it was very nice. Now we can go to sleep, you see. So just imagine you put in a whole life of blissful devotional service, chanting, dancing, feasting, talking about Krishna, being enlivened in the association of devotees throughout your life. And now I'm very tired, I will lay down and go to sleep. And then you wake up in Goloka Vrindavan, you see. For a devotee, that is it. My garment is old and worn out, so now I simply throw it. Is it? That's it. Just like recently we gave example, a rocket ship going into outer space. They have the big heavy booster rocket, you see. The original that takes it off the Earth planet. And then at a certain point they just drop that rocket. They let it fall off and another one takes over. A more subtle one. And then finally that one drops off and finally it just goes in, on its own in outer space. So when the body becomes old and worn out, just drop it. That's all. For a devotee, death is something he just drops the body when it gets in his way. It becomes too much of a hassle to engage the body any longer in Krishna's service. He says, yeah, drop it. You know. The car is too old, you know. I'll just get a new one. You know, I've been driving a, you know, 1948 Chevrolet for too long. Well, mine's a 1947 model, actually. It's too long now, so now just drop it. Get a new one. Get a new material body in Krishna's service, or get your original spiritual body. Either way, if you're engaged in devotional service, you're transcendentally situated. So, it's a very nice thing for the devotee. I simply go to sleep, and I wake up with Krishna. That supreme, all-attractive, beautiful personality who's having unlimited varieties of pastimes with his devotees that are so full of rust, that is full of nectar. The pastimes of Krishna are oozing with nectar, just like a gulab jamun that has unlimited gulab jamun juice. No matter how hard you squeeze it, more juice keeps coming out of that gulab jamun, you see. So Krishna's lila is like that. There's so much sweetness in it. No matter how much you squeeze the sweetness to relish it, there's even more sweetness available, and more sweetness, and more sweetness. It's not like in the material world, punak punash charvata charvananam, that you squeeze very hard and there's nothing left. It's just a dry, empty shell. You see, all your material enjoyment. You go, wow, this love affair is so nice, let me really get into it and enjoy it, and then it turns sour, you see. The material world like that. But when you revive your love affair with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you see, your loving relationship with Him, there is unlimited sweetness available in that relationship. It is called Brahma Saukhyam Tvananta. That spiritual happiness which goes on increasing unlimitedly forever. So we have a very poignant lesson here in these transcendental pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how by absorbing ourselves in the transcendental sound vibration, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, that we can actually experience true Ananda. Right now, we are in a state called near Ananda, no transcendental bliss. We're just struggling. Well, I'm tired and this and that. I got to eat, sleep. Just struggling. Well, I got to do this so you know, I can keep eating and sleeping. No. We're in a state of near ananda. We're not getting ananda right now. We're not getting it. But by taking shelter of the name, by engaging in this wonderful process of bhakti yoga, then we will actually experience ananda. We will know what is actually ananda, you see. We will know what is ananda. Right now we have some vague idea what is actually ananda. But that day will come, we will actually understand what is the real meaning of ananda. We will actually know what is ananda, spiritual bliss. So there is the stage, there is bhakti yoga in practice, you see. And then there is bhakti yoga in spontaneous love. Now we are engaged. If you looked in the Nectar Devotion, it's divided. There's the in practice side, and then there's the spontaneous side. You have to begin with practicing bhakti yoga. Because now we are inclined towards eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which keep us entangled in birth, death, old age, and disease. The fourfold miseries. And then in the middle of these fourfold miseries, then we get the threefold miseries also. You see. So that's seven miseries now. And the Krishna book, Prabhupada described the seven whips also. If the seven miseries, the fourfold and the threefold, weren't enough, now come in the seven whips. So now there's 14 miseries. You see. Of course, there might be some overlap there. The point is, this is a hellish place to be. I mean, this is no fun. This is not a fun place to be, this material world. It's hell. It's hell. But if we take advantage of the association of the bona fide spiritual master, who is a representative of Krishna, through his mercy, we can actually taste the real bliss. Susukam, Prabhupada tells us. Susukam. This Krishna consciousness process is nothing but bliss. We can experience. By coming in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, hearing submissively from him, rendering service unto him, you see. By the mercy of that guru, that spiritual master, we can actually experience transcendental bliss. This is why we're told in the Mundaka Upanishad, Tadviganartam Saguru Meva Bhigatchat. You must approach a guru, you see. Because the guru is that which connects us. There is a very potent powerhouse here in Cologne, too. But if you're not, and you may have a very nice lamp, you see. But if you don't plug it in to the Saka, then you have no light. So you are the lamp, and the guru is the socket, you see. And Krishna is the powerhouse. So if you want to be enlightened, then you have to connect with guru. You must connect with guru. Otherwise you may have a very nice lamp, but it will give no light, you see. No light will be there. No light. This is a first-class lamp. There's a potent powerhouse out there, but when you're not connected with a spiritual master, you're nowhere. You're in the dark. You see? You're in the dark. But when you connect with Guru,
it's not so easy.
Sometimes it's difficult to connect with Guru, you see? Sometimes we have difficulty connecting. We come in contact with the Guru, we have a hard time connecting with him. And sometimes it's difficult to connect. Of course, it's my left hand, also, that's my excuse.
That's a good point. Sometimes it's difficult.
Sometimes it's difficult to connect with the spiritual master. Why? Because we are proud. You see, I don't bow down to anyone. I'm great, you see. I'm really cool. As we say in English slang, I'm hot stuff. Hot stuff. I don't bow down to anyone. So, if we unless we are humble, we may even come in the presence of the spiritual master. But if we're not humble, we won't be able to connect. We'll think, he doesn't understand me, or he's proud, or he's not intelligent, or, we'll find so many faults with the spiritual master, and we should be finding the fault with ourselves. It's just our rebellious nature. We have a rebellious nature, and that is our downfall, actually. It is our rebellious nature which brought us into this material world, and it is our rebellious nature which is keeping us here in this material world. So the spiritual master comes to defeat our rebellious nature. You see? When the disciple is engaged nicely in devotional service, the spiritual master is very pleased. And when the disciple manifests his rebellious nature, then the spiritual master becomes very angry. You see? And he chastises the disciple. You see, don't do like that. That's nonsense. So if we take advantage, it's not that the spiritual master is not being merciful. He's only merciful when he smiles at me and tells me how great I am. No. The spiritual master is merciful whether he's chastising the disciple or he's glorifying the disciple. His mercy is equal. In fact, Prabhupada said this. He said the student who is more chastised, to his advantage. So the intelligent disciple is not afraid to associate with the spiritual master for fear of being chastised. In fact, when the intelligent disciple is chastised, he thinks, this is mercy. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. He feels grateful when he's chastised by the spiritual master because he understands this is cutting through the hard knot in the heart. Spiritual master is called sadhu. Sadhu means one who cuts. With the words of transcendental knowledge, he cuts through the hard knot in the heart. It's called hridaya granthi, the hard knot in the heart. So by the words of transcendental knowledge, Guru cuts through them. You see. He has a very, very sharp razor and he cuts through. So sometimes, being with the spiritual master is like open heart surgery. He cuts through our material attachment. But the disciple understands, I need this. I'm in a diseased state. I need this mercy. So let me just take it and be grateful. That was Lord Chaitanya's position. Can you imagine the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself? And his spiritual master chastised him. He said, you're such a fool, you're not qualified to understand Vedanta philosophy. You should simply chant Hare Krishna because you're less intelligent. You see? Can you imagine? The Lord Chaitanya, what do you mean? I'm God. How you could say I'm God? No. He said, yes, Guru Maharaj. And he just absorbed himself in Namasam Kirtan, in complete ecstasy. You see? So Lord Chaitanya is showing us how to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Even Krishna himself is showing. He went to the ashram, Sandipani Muni. Sometimes in ISKCON, people are amazed. They think someone has to be a sannyasi to be a spiritual master. People say, how you can be a spiritual master when you have a wife? People say,